Hello, Mind Bloomers. This is Mind Bloom, the safe space at the intersection of mental health advocacy and breast cancer awareness. Mind Bloom is your podcast. Come back weekly and listen to my guests as they reflect on their close encounters with emotional disorders and breast cancer. Not an easy task, but we promise to make your mind bloom. Hello, Mind Bloomers. This is Marina G, your host, and this is Mind Bloom. Please remember, the content provided by Mind Bloom is not intended to be a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking medical treatment because of any content referenced or authored by Mind Bloom You. Hi guys, hello and welcome to episode 52 of Mind Bloom. We're coming up on Mind Bloom's first anniversary. It's June 10th, so in about 10 days. And I'm going to be dedicating these 10 days of June to my friends, the accounts on Instagram and elsewhere that have made Mind Bloom. So stick around. I'm going to be giving so many props and shout outs to some of the people without whom Mind Bloom wouldn't be Mind Bloom. Remember, as always, to check out Mind Bloom on all social media platforms. I'm at Mind Bloom You on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, TikTok, LinkedIn, and YouTube as Mind Bloom. And my website is mindbloomyou.com. Clubhouse, you can find me either through Marina G or at MindBloomU. And the same can be said for LinkedIn, Marina G or at MindBloomU. Please send me an email if there's anything you would like to talk to me about. The email is info@mindbloomu.com. And through the website, you can also just contact me and I would get your email with your request to collaborate or just say hi. Remember as well to leave a review for Mind Bloom the podcast on the Apple Podcasts app. Today, I wanted to share with you a few insights I got from reading Rachel Hollis's book, Girl, Wash Your Face. I'm an avid reader. I have a PhD in literature, for crying out loud. And so reading and books is a huge part of my life. Lately, and by lately I mean maybe 1 year or two, I discovered the joys of audiobooks, and I haven't stopped since. I like to listen to an audiobook right before I fall asleep. I like to listen to an audiobook if I'm walking. But as I was saying, last week I downloaded and listened to Girl, Wash Your Face by Rachel Hollis. I had come across the title a million times, and I'm not particularly excited by books with such titles like Girl, Do This or How to Un-F Your Life, or Girl, Don't Be Sorry. I don't know. There's, you know what I'm talking about. All these millions of books that fill Barnes & Noble these days. And they all promise, you know, heaven on earth and instant self-care and all the solutions for your life. So I knew about the title, and last week I just decided, well, you know, let's just do it, and if we don't like it, we don't like it, that's fine. So I downloaded Girl, Wash Your Face, because then I also thought, what's this whole thing about washing your face? Is it because we've been crying? We girls, we cry and like our makeup is ruined, so we gotta wash our face. Is it that we shouldn't even wear any makeup? I was just curious, so I picked up the book. And it was curious to see perfectly spelled out the characteristics, I guess, of a self-help book and an autobiographical slash pep talk kind of book. And I'm just going to say it up front that I didn't dislike the book. I didn't hate the book. I did not find it painful to listen to the book. I think Rachel writes well. Her tone is entertaining and light and very colloquial. It's perfect for an audiobook, and it's perfect if you're going on a walk or perhaps driving. It doesn't require huge amounts of concentration. But the more I listened, the more I got the impression that I knew exactly where the book was going and what the motivations behind it were and what she, Rachel Hollis, was trying to do. And of course, I'm not going to argue that I know what Rachel Hollis wants to do when writing a book or what her motivations are. What I mean is, it became clear to me what the overall message of these books is and how it may or may not affect the reader or the listener. And it's about that effect that I want to talk about today. Again, and always, from a very personal perspective, from my point of view as a reader and as a listener of the audiobook by Rachel Hollis. First, it's very clear that the pressure to be authentic, the pressure to come across as yourself, as an open book for the whole world to see, the pressure to be vulnerable, and the pressure to share with others, your pain points throughout your life, that pressure is real. That is manifest in this book. Rachel goes to extremes to present herself naked to the audience. And I almost mean naked jokingly because, well, there's a chapter about sex, a chapter about motherhood and giving birth and all those fun things. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that page after page, we witness her need to bring forth everything about her life in every and any aspect of her life, marriage, sex, like I said, motherhood, eating habits, fitness habits, motivation hacks, professional life, of course, and goals and aspirations and means through which she achieved those goals or aspirations, and how she rewarded herself after meeting those goals and expectations, such as the story she tells about the little Louis Vuitton bag. She vowed to herself that she would buy a little Louis Vuitton purse after she got her first check for $10,000 from a client. The purse was priced at $1,000, and Rachel explains that that amount is extreme and she finds it ridiculous to make such a purchase. But that was the thing she needed to do. That was her desire and the carrot that she had dangling in order to complete her goals and just aspirations. And so she rewarded herself with the Louis Vuitton purse. And I find that okay. It's something we talk so much about, that we reward ourselves and that we celebrate the little victories, the big victories, any kind of victory. And she did, and that's what she was doing by purchasing the purse. So I absolutely agree with that and think that everything by Louis Vuitton is absolutely gorgeous. But my point is precisely that Rachel Wood, as a writer, feel the need to fill the pages of her book with minute descriptions of how her days are filled, how her meals are prepped for the kids, how painful the adoption of her daughter was, and all of it is moving. I'm really, really not against Rachel by any means. But on the one hand, I feel that this need to show vulnerability and to show up as authentic is starting to get on my nerves a little bit. And it's not that we shouldn't be vulnerable or authentic, genuine, honest to ourselves, even before we're honest to others. It's not that. It's just the pressure to do so now is clearly becoming overbearing. Instagram is filled with these photos that are the race for authenticity. No, I am going to be more authentic than you, and my writing on the captions of Instagram is going to make you cry more than someone else's. And the books I read are all about women spilling their guts out, and we are all spilling our guts on Clubhouse, on these podcasts. And that's all great. And it allows for so many teaching moments, and it's taught me so much. But I see it now more as a trend, and a dangerous trend at that. Because first, it's exposing us incredibly, exposing our intimacy, our bodies, all the little corners and crannies of our minds and deepest secrets and wants and fears. And it's pressure. And pressure, in whatever form it takes, is never good. Maybe 50 years ago, we were pressured to be in the kitchen and to cook and to look pretty and to look smart. And what happened then? You had TV stars and recipe book authors leading the way, right? So that was a lot of help. That was helpful, I guess. The housewife needed to learn from the role models. And you turned a page, and 50, 70 years later, here we are. And now who's leading the role modeling is these women. I mean, industrious, strong, intelligent, but who, in my opinion, are starting to succumb to just models and just patterns and molds. And it's so good to talk. It's so therapeutic to talk about our problems, our fears, our anxiety, our cancer, our depression. But when is enough? I ask, and I don't have the answer. I only ask, when is enough? Because if we're now waking up in the morning and thinking that our next book, our next blog article, our next Instagram post, or our next room on Clubhouse needs to be seen, to be heard, to be valid, needs to be led in this confessional tone, this intimate tone, the support group, the 12-step support group tone, then we're all doing the same. And we're doing it because we're following a mold, and perhaps not because that is the helpful thing to do. I'm a big advocate for therapy, as you know, and and talk therapy mostly, but I worry that the unabridged release of our deepest secrets may be just that, just unabridged and redundant, in the sense that it may not be so productive, because it's not being guided. It's just being. We're just sharing and oversharing. We don't want commiseration. We don't want pity. And this is not a competition. My broken household growing up was not more detrimental to my mental health today than yours. And that leads me to the second point I noticed in Rachel Hollis's book. The spilling of your guts in the book, and by that I mean the confessional tone in the book, the sharing or oversharing of personal details that include her husband, perhaps co-workers, children. I mean, it doesn't matter. But the point is that the oversharing is made possible only in hindsight. And the secrets and the hacks and the tips and the goals and expectations that were met or not met, but mostly met, are looked at in hindsight. And that is obvious because it's an autobiographical / memoir / like I said, pep talk for other women. So it can only tell us stories that have happened already, of course. But if we look more deeply at this, then my question is, what is the benefit of sharing your woes and struggles if you're now looking at them from a place of strength, a place of redemption, and a place where these difficult times no longer pose a threat? Perhaps you're going through other difficult times, but not those. My friend the other day mentioned the expression armchair advice, and I'd never heard that expression. And I laughed, and it makes perfect sense. The expression, the image is perfect. It's someone sitting in an armchair, perhaps smoking a pipe, that's just me, and giving you advice, unsolicited advice on how to do this and how to go about that. And that's a little bit how Rachel Hollis's book felt to me. And as she lists all the lies that we have believed in across the years and how she debunks these lies, I think it's a good structure. So as she's doing this, she's talking to us from a place of power, hierarchy, perhaps, and knowledge. So she has more information than we do, we the listeners or the readers of the book. And that is because she lived those moments and she overcame them. And now she's telling the story about them. And there's nothing special about that. Because as she was going through difficult moments, let's say, for example, a beautiful part of her book where she tells the story of the adoption, the process of adopting the little girl she now has as a child. She is very minute in telling us how painful that was, how painful the process was, how lengthy, how much loss was involved. But she's talking to us from a place where this situation is already resolved. Rachel successfully and her husband successfully adopted the little girl, and in that respect, unless I don't know of something, I believe that aspect of her life is resolved. But as a reader, as a listener of the audiobook, for me, what would make sense would be to hear about how she coped at the time with that difficult moment in her life. I know she is a Christian, and I know she must have prayed immensely. And she and then she realized that the right time had to come. And I understand all of that. But if one is going to overshare, then I want to hear how you got there. What did you do when you woke up in the middle of the night sobbing or having an anxiety attack, perhaps? What did you do right there and then? What tools did you use? Where was this pain situated? I want to know, because that will show me that I'm not alone. Was it in your chest, Rachel, the pain? Was it in the pit of your stomach? And that's what I want to know. I want to know that it felt like it would never end, that pain. Not that it ended and I'm here now. Not that. Not me, at least. And so I was a bit disappointed with the book. The minute I started seeing this trend, that this was just what was going to happen, an overexposure of her, I don't know, darkest moments or also victories, you know, just this drilling, this intentional drilling into parts of her life. But then turning those moments into, and this is what I've learned with this, which is, I'm not kidding, it's a section of each chapter. I believe it's called What Have I Learned? What Can You Take Away? Something like that. So it's that part that was a little bit unnerving to me. It was, you know, you don't know, Rachel. You know about you, yes, but you cannot tell me, sitting from beyond the curve of the problem, you can't tell me how to manage this or that problem now that I'm not yet beyond the curve. I'm still in the throes of it. And that's ultimately why I decided to talk in this episode about this, because I didn't want to miss the opportunity to say this, is I think at the end of the day, it ends up being detrimental to someone, to a woman who's going, let's say, through a cancer scare or cancer treatment, a loss of a loved one, a job loss in the wake of the pandemic. It's not fair on that woman, that's my belief. It's not fair on that woman to hear, do this and try it this way and you'll succeed, because Rachel Hollis didn't know that she was going to succeed when she was going through those moments. And we don't know if we're going to succeed either. We're not looking in hindsight. We don't have yet 2020 vision over our future, what lies ahead. So we can't win. We can't win against a book that's already published, that's already out, that is successful, and that tells, yes, dreadful stories sometimes and vulnerable moments, yes, but from the lens of an analytical look back. And we all know how analytical we can be if we're looking back. But if we're looking ahead at the doctor's appointment next week, the biopsy next week, the fear of recurrence, if we're in the throes of depression, if we can't get out of bed because our anxiety is so debilitating, we can't be analytical then. And that's why I was saying we can't win. Because our story hasn't been written yet, hasn't ended yet. And so I say, yes, let's celebrate all the little victories. Let's listen to all these stories that are so conducive to empowerment, our own empowerment. Yes, if that helps us, let's do it. But let's keep a critical eye on these narratives, because when we're in the thick of it, we don't have the privilege of the bird's eye view. we don't have the clarity and we don't have the tools. Maybe we have our tools, our own tools, and these books are part of our tools. But use them with a grain of salt and trust your gut, your instinct. You know what you're going to do, and you know you're going to get past whatever it is that you need to conquer. And guess what? You do not need any armchair advice. So that's what I wanted to say to you this week. I hope you enjoyed listening. I certainly had fun talking to you on the other side. And I look forward now to meeting you, to finding you, and chatting with you on social media and email. Maybe at the park, because now we can all go out again. So be well. I love you all. Bye-bye.